I've always felt that maybe something is wrong with me. Maybe I'm possessed with this kind of demon that cannot be casted away.
This is Balm.
I remember praying so hard, asking that I want to experience this. I want to be able to fall down. Why is it that when they touch them, they just start falling down and I don't?
A young woman in the middle of the sprawling city of Lagos. She's telling me about her very personal journey with religion.
Is it that there's something wrong with me? I mean, I should feel that Holy Spirit that others are feeling. I don't feel it.
It's the kind of conversation I love to have. Hearing how someone's life is shaped by their faith. That will never not be fascinating to me. But in a country like Nigeria, experiences like Balm's aren't so often spoken about.
Another part of me felt maybe these people are just crazy and I'm the same person who understands that these things are just gimmicks.
You see, her story isn't about belief, but non-belief, and a life shaped by values derived from the world outside of religion. Values derived from humanity.
So for me, humanism trumps religion. Religion tends to just, it's like selling false hope on things you're not even sure of, things you don't see. But with humanity, with you can relate with your fellow human, we have created our own rules, like ethics, that guides us. And that should be enough.
Hi, I'm Kim Chakanetsa, and this is The Comb, a BBC World Service original podcast. Each week, I comb the African continent for stories, the ones lying just below the surface, that matter. Join the conversation online at #TheComb. I've long been fascinated by religion, the many forms that faith can take, and the way it shapes our lives, from the very communal to the deeply personal. But I'm also interested in what it means to exist outside of that religious space, to navigate life as a non-believer. Atheism is often presented as simply the absence of a thing, the rejection of whatever it is religion professes. But recently I've been learning about humanism. It's a form of atheism which goes further than this. Humanism involves its own set of beliefs and values, about living a life of meaning and purpose, but anchored in the strength of humankind, rather than a supernatural godly power. Humanists in Nigeria made the news last year, as the president of the Humanist Association of Nigeria, Mubarak Bala, was found guilty of blaspheming Islam in a social media post.
A high court in the northern Nigerian state of Kano has sentenced a prominent atheist to 24 years.
He was arrested in 2020 after being accused of criticizing Islam.
A group of Muslims there had filed a petition to the authorities against Mr. Bala. He could have faced the death penalty if tried in a Sharia court.
Bala's 24-year prison sentence sent shock and outrage in Nigeria and beyond, and was a sobering reminder for other atheists and humanists how deep the opposition to their non-belief is. So, in this episode, two other Nigerian humanists. They were born decades apart, but they both share a curiosity, skepticism, and a determination to embrace humanism, despite the stigma.
This is The Comb.
Ye ni The Comb.
The Comb, no.
Ni The Comb.
The Comb.
First, you respect people because they are humans. It doesn't matter their age, it doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter if they worship the same God as you. Respect people. People deserve to be respected. People deserve kindness. It doesn't matter who
I'm starting are. With Balm, the lady who you heard at the top of the episode. Balm isn't her real name, but it's safer for us to protect her identity, given the reactions she might get for sharing her non-religious beliefs. She's a fascinating person to chat with. She speaks with absolute confidence, outlining the clear thought processes behind her humanistic beliefs. But those beliefs, so logical to her, are shocking to many in her community. Nigeria is one of the most religious countries in the world, according to the Pew Research Center, almost evenly split between Muslims and Christians, with just 2% of the population belonging to either a different religion or no religion at all. As if to prove the point, while I'm talking to Balm, we're interrupted by a noisy preacher.
Oh God.
It's exactly the kind of noise you don't want when recording for a podcast. In this case, it's a fitting illustration of how Balm feels religion is pushed on her every day. And that's something Balm's been used to for as long as she can remember.
We're majorly heathens, just boring people, just people who farm to sustain their lives. We worship our local gods.
Balm grew up in a small village in southeast Nigeria where local religious belief, heathenism as she calls it, was part of the rhythm of everyday life.
Aliezi is personal gods that every family has. There's this particular tree, so every family has that tree in front of their house where they sacrifice fowl.
Practicing the local religion has happy memories for Balm. Time with family, community, dressing up for festivals, eating meals together.
Incantations are made. Then during the major festival of the whole village, that's when we go to Ami. It's a big festival. People cook with melon. We tie white clothes on our chests and eat with Mary. It's one of those happy days.
But there was one major element of the experience lacking for Balm. Did you feel a connection to the spiritual side of what you were doing, of what your family were doing?
I didn't.
Quite simply, she didn't believe in it. If there's one characteristic that seems to define Balm, all the way from her childhood in the village to her life now as a grown adult in the city, it's a deep curiosity and an irresistible instinct to test out whatever she's told, even when the potential consequences might be scary.
There was this place in my village then. If you as much as happen to fall down or your hands touch the ground, which is considered sacred, a sacrifice has to be made to appease the gods. So it's like a sacrilege for falling down there.
A particular point in the village where falling over, touching the ground, was considered sacrilegious, with potentially sinister consequences if appropriate sacrifices weren't made. Well, Balm tripped over on that spot.
I thought to myself, I don't want my mom sacrificing coins or killing a fowl and wasting it on this place when we could have just eaten it. So I didn't tell my mom. Part of me wanted to know what would happen.
So Balm waited, wanting to see what terrible consequences might come.
I didn't tell anybody till today and nothing has happened. So
were you not scared? Were you more curious than scared?
Yeah, I was more curious than scared. I didn't care what would happen anyway. I felt that, okay, if something is going to happen, then maybe at that point I will confess. But up to today, nothing has happened to me, so.
Balm was just 7 years old when she left home for the first time. She had an opportunity to get an education by going to live with a wealthier family in a neighbouring state. She would do small domestic tasks for them, and in return, they would send her to school. What was that like for you, leaving behind your whole family and a familiar home environment?
As at that time, I wanted to explore. I wanted to go out there and see what's out there beyond my village. So living was kind of exciting for me. When I got there, I saw a bigger house, a better house than the one that the hut we were living.
The move opened up an exciting new world for Balm. And far from the village, the spiritual world was different too. Local gods didn't feature. The family were devout Christians.
They asked me if we prayed in my house. I said no. I explained to them what we do. And they said, I have a lot of things that need to be casted out of me because I've been exposed to the heathen life. So I need to pray and they need to pray for me. I need to undergo deliverance. And, you know, so when they pray, I join in the taught me, I joined the catechism class next and, you know.
And when you were told that you needed to have things cast out of you because of your heathen lifestyle, how did that make you feel?
Every new thing is an adventure for me, so I really smiled and I'm happy to witness whatever they're going to do. For me, I didn't care what was going to happen. I didn't care the God I worshipped.
So, at 8 years old, after prayers and Bible study, Balm was baptized into a new religion. But she found herself as unmoved by the Catholic rituals as she had been by the local practices in the village.
They poured water on my head, so that's it. I didn't feel anything. I was more concerned about the clothes, the white clothes I was wearing, and feeling special.
Balm had been told that her previous local religion would send her to hellfire, while Catholicism would lead her to salvation. But she felt that the two faiths had more in common than her new Christian family realized.
They're basically the same. I mean, we don't go around bowing to the tree, but they bow down to those carvings. I see Holy Communion as the same thing we do when we cook and eat in front of their liaison or...
Just as she had done in the village, testing, falling down on the particular sacred patch of earth, Balm tested some of the assertions of her new Catholic religion. She says as a teenager she was told that certain things, if you did them, you had to confess before receiving communion, or you'd die. Well, she did them, and she never confessed, and she went for communion anyway. Nothing happened. So she concluded it wasn't true.
It was very lonely. It was frustrating. When you lift your questions and ask, and the next thing they tell you that is the demons, is the evil spirit that is putting those things in you. They think you're crazy or you're possessed. So it was a very lonely place to be.
Balm shares all this with such confidence now. But it wasn't just loneliness that troubled her. Through childhood and into adulthood, she was constantly surrounded by people who seemed to have access to this feeling and faith that she'd never known. She'd see others falling to the floor when being anointed and wondered desperately why it wasn't having the same effect on her.
I remember praying so hard, asking that, I want to experience this. I want to be able to fall down. Why is it that when they touch them, they just start falling down and I don't? Is it I am possessed? Is it that there's something wrong with me? I mean, I should feel that Holy Spirit that others are feeling.
I want to leave Balm's story there for the moment and introduce you to another curious young Nigerian who is going through similar confusion and doubt 2 decades before Balm.
Okay, my name is Leo Igwe. I was born in a small village.
Leo Igwe is a human rights activist and a representative at the International Humanist and Ethical Union. I'm using Leo's real name because he's well known now as a leading member of the Nigerian humanist movement. It's an identity few would have seen coming from his upbringing in a devoutly Catholic community.
Yeah, life was typically rural, laid back, no electricity, no pipe bomb water. My family was living in a hut, and we used to trek to fetch water.
In the midst of this simple but carefree childhood, Leo remembers an underlying anxiety, a current of fear felt by the adults in this community and taught to the children.
In growing up, there were a lot of uncertainties, of course, from our parents. Growing up, our parents made us to understand that we had enemies and who could be after us, who could undermine us, who could kill us through some supernatural means. They made us understand that people could harm you through magical means. You know, sometimes when people hate you, there's always this perception or this understanding that they could go somewhere and do certain magic or certain sacrifice that could undermine your health or your progress.
In this world of potential enemies with uncontrollable, even supernatural powers, Catholicism provided a comfort to Leo's parents and practical action for self-protection.
So from very early time, we started praying. They taught us to pray before you eat, pray before you leave the house, pray before you sleep.
But while it provided a comfort to his parents, Leo found the religious routines to be an unwelcome interruption of his life.
I found the rosary a bit too long because you repeat a particular prayer, Hail Mary, about 50 times. So it was a little boring and lengthy. And we used to say it in the night. And I used to be always sleepy. I was about to sleep. And the last thing I would want is for somebody to tell me to kneel down and start reciting Hail Mary about 50 times.
The rosary recitations may not have been to Leo's taste, but there were other aspects of religion which suited his outgoing social nature very well.
Sometimes I want to go to church. I want to see my friends. There wasn't any idea of connection with God, no. It was all about the social value, the fact that I was enjoying it because all my friends were there and they will see us wear special gown and move there with the priest and they will ring in bell and be moving across and things like that. Was there any thought of God as a child? No.
As well as being social and outgoing, Leo seems to be a natural high achiever. Just as Balm was driven by a need to question and test things, Leo's instinct pushed him to excel in whatever task was in front of him.
You are trying to outperform other people, either in going to mass and being a good boy and being a good altar boy, being punctual and being able to wear the altar boy clothes.
To everyone around him, Leo must have looked like an exemplary altar boy. In truth, he didn't believe in the religion that he was practicing, but Catholicism was the only path he knew, so he continued down it. He even put himself forward to join the local seminary, a step towards becoming a priest.
We went for the interview, they asked us, why do you want to be a priest? And I didn't know what to say. When they were preparing us for the interview, they just told us that when they ask you, why do you want to be a priest? You tell them that you want to serve God in a special way. So I memorized that, went for the interview. I'm not a dull person. So when I went there, they asked me, why do you want to be a priest? I said, I want to serve God in a special way. Boom, off I go. That's how I joined the seminary.
So at the age of 12, the seminary became Leo's world. It's like a special boarding school, still teaching regular high school subjects, but managed by priests with a strong emphasis on religious education and a strict routine of Catholic practices. When he was 18, things started to change. Leo was starting to study philosophy and theology for the first time. In these classes, success wasn't measured just by picking the right answers or correctly performing rituals. He finally had the chance to think more about the meaning behind what he was doing. At last, there was space for questioning, and all those doubts and the disbelief that Leo had first felt as a child could finally be explored. And Leo saw problems with the way he'd experienced structures of religion.
It wasn't all about God. It was all about human beings, obeying human beings, being the good book of human beings, punishment from human beings, not from God. I realized that it's all about human sanctions, human punishment, human control, and human endorsement of your behavior. I was actually more afraid of my rector, the rector of my school, the principal of my school, than anything you can talk about it, call it a god or a deity. So for me, he was actually the god I was afraid of, not some kind of supernatural force out there.
Of course, these are Leo's personal views, and many would strongly disagree with what he's saying. At the time, he struggled to find anyone who would take his thoughts seriously.
Of course, when you discuss it, of course, in hushed tones with your colleagues, maybe there's no God. They'll say, look at the Catholic Church has been there for centuries. They'll say, okay, look at the number of people who are Catholics. They're in their millions and billions. And who are you? What do you think you are? So sometimes you really feel that maybe there's something you have not gotten, you have not understood somewhere.
If these kinds of thoughts were controversial when Balm expressed them, for Leo, 20 years earlier, living in an actual seminary, they were almost unheard of. When he, during his philosophy studies, gradually came out as a non-believer, people speculated that he was in some kind of cult or a satanic movement. His mother worried for his safety, as people warned he would go not only to hell, but to the hottest part of hell, for denying the existence of God. I asked him if he thought about it being easier just to ignore those feelings, squash his disbelief, and continue to behave as a believer, the same as he'd been doing since childhood.
Yes, it would have been easier, but I would have gone maybe mental. I couldn't connect with meaning that goes with environment. And even as I speak to you today, I still cannot. Okay? First of all, how do you come into a building? Somebody will tell you God is here. And you look around, you can't see any trace of any deity. You ask yourself, is there really a God? Okay? Now, I couldn't connect with that. And for me, I would have lived, very false life, miserable. I would have died. I don't think I would have made it.
Let's move on and talk about humanism. When did you first become aware of humanism and what drew you to it?
Yeah, it was actually when I was studying in the seminary, because when we are studying philosophy, you have to study different schools of thought. So I became curious and I had to go and read a bit about it and found out that it was like an alternative to religion, counter-religion, something that really undermines, in quote, undermining, in quote, you know, the religious paradigm or universe.
What does it mean to be a humanist?
Well, I think this is a very interesting question. If I should say, number one, that the word humanism is not an African language term. It's an English term. So, but what did I understand about it? Growing up, this idea that I have to be talking to a God, God is talking to me, it didn't make sense at all. Human beings talk to me. I offend human beings and they get back at me. So I felt that for me, that should be the kind of my main reference point. And I also felt that we can't postpone this idea of being happy till an afterlife, because I found it outrageous that a religion that's a view of life will tell you, okay, don't worry, no matter how you suffer here, there's perfect happiness in afterlife after you are dead. My question is, why postpone it? Human beings are capable of evil, so much evil and so much good. So that if I have encounters, bad experiences from other human beings, I also remember that people have been very kind to me.
For Leo, the mental freedom that he gets from humanism goes beyond spirituality to apply to other areas of regular life as well.
When you are growing up, they try to tell you that, Christianity is the best religion and Jesus is the savior. You know, there's always this idea that you are told to see your own religion as the best. It liberated me from that mental bondage of thinking that my religion is the best, or my ethnic group is the best, or my race is the best, or my continent is the best. We are just all human beings, a member of different human family.
When Leo was first exploring all this, he says there were a few people with similar thoughts, but most would have been too nervous to be public with those beliefs.
Because from your family, to your community, to your job, getting scholarships, getting government appointments in some places, the structures are so tied to religion that when you come out openly to say, I'm non-religious, I'm an atheist or agnostic, for a lot of people, that's the end of the case. So a lot of people are worried about that. So for them, the smart way to be a humanist or to be non-religious is to play along, pay lip service to religion.
Leo saw potential in humanism to provide community. For Leo, this has never been about recruiting people or trying to convert anyone away from their religion towards humanism instead. But instead, it's to provide a space for those who already hold those beliefs, where they can speak about them openly.
I'm not interested in trying to tell people, please don't believe. If you want to believe, you are fine. I defend the right of people to profess any belief. If you want to worship a stone, worship a stone. If you want to worship a rock, you want to worship a cow, if you want to worship whatever you want to worship, please do that. But there should be a space for those who don't want to. Religion leaves no space, no dignified space for the unbeliever.
So let's fast forward 20 years to when Balm was reaching that same point of non-belief after years feeling lonely and frustrated. Things were different for Balm, in part because of the community built by Leo and others, and in part simply because of the internet. In her own community, Balm may have been isolated in her disbelief, but now she had access to a different world.
While I was going through these doubts and everything, I used to go to Nairaland then to read.
Nairaland is an English language forum for Nigerians online, one of the most popular websites in the country.
So one day I stumbled on the religious section of Nairaland and I saw people saying stuff, even things I haven't even conceived nor ever said before. I saw people saying religion is trash, there's no God. I felt I wasn't alone. So there are actually people out there who has the same school of thought as me. it was an eureka moment.
Balm calls it a eureka moment for her, finding that she wasn't alone. And it wasn't just solidarity. That forum provided ideas and guidance to help finally explore those doubts in depth and develop her ideas. There were suggested books And the first bomb read was The God Delusion by Richard Dawkins, a classic of atheist literature.
It opened my eyes to my brain to a lot of things. All the maybe started to make sense. I stopped feeling alone. I saw there was somebody posted a WhatsApp link for people who are in the same school of thought as me, people who are still asking questions. You know, seeing that there are people out there who are just like me felt so welcoming.
It was also that forum which first introduced Balm to humanism, specifically, and with it, an alternative way to still structure life for the better, despite the absence of religion. For example,
golden rule, that thing that you do to me that I wouldn't like, I will as much as try not to do it to you.
It's the same sentiment found in most religious ethical codes. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But for Balm and other humanists, you don't need a divine ruler to tell you this. It's just a logical conclusion to make, a better life for all humanity.
I mean, it's hypocritical that I would hurt you and then think that I have to pray to some father in heaven and he would forgive me. I mean, it's even worse that he would even forgive me for hurting my fellow human. So I think if you subscribe to that idea of humanism, you will know that hurting others is bad and you wouldn't want to be hurt, so there's no point hurting others.
In the real world, away from the internet, Balm and Leo and other humanists still have to deal with the stigma and intolerance towards their views. Only Balm's close friends know that she's a non-believer, as it's still more sensible for her to keep up the appearance of faith in most settings. But things may gradually be changing as atheism and humanism become more visible on social media. More young Nigerians are openly identifying as non-believers. And despite the challenges and the fears, both Balm and Leo have found peace and belonging in humanism. Do you ever regret coming out as a humanist?
Never. Never. It's one of the best things to happen to me. I believe in humanism. I think everybody should subscribe to it. I mean, we are here. Let's not bother about the things we can't see, the things we believe will happen in afterlife. Let's just live while we're here. Treat each other with respect, with kindness, with, you know, care about each other.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you'd like to learn more about Mubarak Bala's case, then take a look at the BBC Africa's YouTube channel. There's a fantastic documentary for my colleague Yemisi. It's called The Cost of Being an Atheist, and it's on the BBC News Africa channel. Next week on The Comb.
I saw that my body was ready, control. There is nothing free that you can do. No choice for you. You have to request, to beg, everything. In fact, it is very sad. Being a refugee is a sad moment, and it is not something that is good at all. Being a refugee, unless the situation demands that things are so bad for you and you have to run for your life.
This episode was produced by Mary Goodhart and me, Kim Chakaneta. Rob Wilson did the sound design. Piers Lynch is our editor.